Welcome to the Getting Past the Premium podcast, where we focus on breaking down risk management problems bit by bit until we find a solution. Enjoy today's episode and be sure to follow us for weekly content.
All right, welcome back to Getting Past the Premium, everybody. Always excited when I get to be with my man, Mick Hunt. Excited to have you back on, dude. I appreciate you taking the time to jump on, and I think everybody knows who you are, but you know, we'll have you give the intro, but appreciate you, dude.
I appreciate you more, man. Oh. Anytime I get to spend time with you is awesome because we talk about real life stuff, and that's what I love about you. We don't, there's no fluff. We talk about things that are pressing, and I think things people want to hear.
Yeah, and that's what we want to try to do. I mean, you know, we're both in the trenches on a daily basis with people, and so fighting the fight, as we like to say, right? And so we can talk to a lot of those things, and but that's what I think is great. So real quick, if anybody doesn't know who you are, give the 30,000 foot background on, you know, how you got to where you're at, what Premier Strategy Box is, and then we'll dive into our couple topics.
Yeah, how I got here. So literally, I've been in the insurance space my entire adult life. The day I graduated college, I started working for a nationwide insurance agent, Mark Vitale. So shout out to Mark Vitale, who I call like my professional father. I learned a lot from Mark. And after several years of learning through him, I decided to start my own agency. And what I realized was that the path to success for me was in commercial. So we were commercial focused. Everything that we did from a process procedure standpoint was about revenue touch points. I'll be honest, as a CEO and leader of my agency, I didn't care about management systems and all those crazy things that people tend to put a lot of focus on. Yeah. But that allowed me to scale. After 3 years, I was over almost $3.5 million of revenue, sold to a large firm, took over a brokerage where I got us to $70 million of revenue. And at that point I said, you know what? I want to help retail agents understand that growth doesn't have to be as challenging as we make it. I'm not saying it's easy, but if we focus on the right things as the leaders, the principals, the presidents or CEOs of our companies, we can do dynamic things. And so that's what Premier Strategy Box was built upon, was helping organizations with the right tactics, skill sets needed to scale, whether that's process development, producer development, KPI acknowledgement, or whatever. Like that's our focus. And then our new rendition of PADI, or the Premier Agency Development Institute, we focus on training producers, account managers on the skill sets that are needed to be the most successful advisor that they can be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. And the one thing I've always loved about what you guys do at Premier Strategy Box now with PADI is it's extremely simple. Like you boil down those techniques, habits, whatever you want to call them, that lead to success into very simple, repeatable processes. Mm-hmm. You know, and it makes what seems like a big, daunting challenge in growing your agency to something that you can take and implement very clearly and repeatably. And so that's what one thing I've always appreciated about our conversations, because they're very easy for people to take things out of and right. go implement. So,
right.
But that leads us to, you know, a conversation we were having beforehand. And I think this is a great topic because the business landscape's changing. Our clients are changing, right? And not only just in their expectations, which we'll get into, but just demographically, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're now getting younger business owners that are either getting into leadership positions, or maybe they're taking over businesses or starting businesses that have a different set of expectations and understanding of how the business works or should work. And one of the things that I love to do as I'm thinking about our firm and how we want to operate is I love to take and think about other industries and see things that I like there, and then how applicable could that be in our industry? And I think that's important because we have to remember as a business owner, if they're getting great service in a different way on another segment of their business, they're going to expect that same thing from you or something.
Absolutely.
Similar, right? And so they're looking at it that way. So we need to look at it that way. So let's just talk high level. You know, what are you seeing in that new age of business owner that you're kind of seeing this transition to? What does it look like, and how are they expecting us to kind of operate, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head. The modern buyer has officially changed, right? You know, we were talking offline in one of our numerous conversations that you and I have, right, about how, you know, generationally, we've always had new buyers come into the world, right? But for the first time, we see a different set of ideals in how transactions take place, right? Like, I'm sure you have the same principles as your father, and that's kind of how you do things, right? I'm the same way, but my kids are not like me, right? Like, they have the same principles, but you're going to text them, right? Yeah. I was telling you, my youngest son, who's in New Zealand right now, we rarely talk on the phone. And if I call him, he thinks the world has come to an end.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he would much rather text me than actually pick up the phone and talk.
Yeah.
And so you're starting to see that type of communication mindset with the modern buyer, the new age buyer now. And I think for all of us who have brought on staff that are younger, we start to see they learn a little bit different, right? Like, their pace is a little bit different. Their utilization of technology is a little bit different. So if we're seeing that change with us internally, well, what do we think our prospects and clients are also going through? And I think that was very eye-opening for me, is finally for the first time seeing buying habits are changing. Communication habits are definitely changing in a big way.
Absolutely. And again, I look at it, there's you can take the one of two approaches to this, right? You can throw up your hands and say, these guys don't get it and they want all this stuff and they want me to communicate this way. Or you say, let's meet them where they're at and let's be let's provide value because we're communicating the way that they want. I mean, you were talking about, which I'd love you to talk about, the one of your producers that you coach and the deal they close. But at the end of the day, this business owner wants to communicate via text because they're busy. You know, they're like, I don't have time. Like, I want to know and I want to get this right, but I don't have time to sit down for an hour, hour and a half to go through this. And there's some buyers that are going to be that way. And there's some that are going to still say, no, I need to spend the time because I'm new. I don't understand it. I need you to walk me through it. And so you got to understand that, meet them where they're at, right? Because there are a variety of ways you can communicate nowadays. I think it's important to understand how your buyers want to communicate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our producers that we consult and coach literally just closed a $30,000 revenue account, and 80% of the communication was via text message, right? There was a generational change at the company that the prospect worked for, where he became the COO and was the decision maker, the head of insurance. Insurance rolled under their umbrella.
Yep.
And their current agent was trying to set hour and a half long meetings and sending emails with a ton of attachments without not necessarily explaining what's there.
Yeah.
Right. And so our producer, you know, sent an email, and we always teach your intro emails need to be bullet points because that's what most people expect, right? Like, short to the point. No longer do people want diaries, right, when they're reading emails. And so he said, hey, you're the first person that's reached out to me in language that I can understand about insurance. Can we have a quick call? And so it was a phone call that just explained who he was, the agency that he's with, the services that he provides, because he's very niche specific, and we can talk about that all day long. And so the prospect said, awesome, here's my number. Can you text me? And it was like 4 points that he had questions about. Can you text me this, 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 and that? And the producer did. And then what he noticed was the prospect just kept texting. So anytime he had a question, he would just text, right? And the producer answered. And this was probably 45 days. So I'm not going to say it was a quick hit, but it was 45 days of communication via text. And they closed the deal. Literally. And when the producer said, you know, what are some of the things that made you want to do business with me, to the point that you actually just said almost verbatim, he said, you were willing to communicate with me how I wanted to and never tried to set an hour, hour and a half long meeting with me because I don't have time, and you didn't intimidate me.
Yeah.
And I want people to understand that latter part. You did not intimidate me. I think a lot of times in our minds, producers, account managers, we try to show our knowledge.
Yeah.
and most times that's not what people want. And most times, honestly, that's a turnoff, right? I mean, think about it. We all, for the most part, go to YouTube for something, right? Mm-hmm. We search something and we look for the YouTube video. And most of the time, if we're being honest, the shorter video is usually the one that we watch first.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
Can I get in 30 seconds what this other person was giving me in 3 minutes? Again, if we think like that outside of our world, outside of our workspace, do we not think other people are thinking that same way? So how can you be simplistic to the point, but with enough information that's dynamic? And that's where we have to start going today, because I promise you, again, if we're being honest with ourselves, we all search something on YouTube. If we can watch something in 30 to 60 seconds that we can still get in 3 to 5, we're going to watch 30 to 60 all day long, right?
Yeah, totally.
Because time is our biggest and most valuable asset. And that's what this buyer said. We've had many stories like that over the last 6 months, right? That was the biggest. A $30,000 revenue account was obviously the biggest. I mean, there's been a ton of $6,000-$7,000 revenue accounts where the story is literally the same. And you'd be surprised. It's been across all niche markets. So contractors, one of my people do nothing but sell cyber, right? Mm-hmm. Selling that the same way. Property accounts, HAB accounts. I promise you, this is where the modern buyer is going. And don't always assume that it means age either, because we're conditioning ourselves to buy this way now.
Yeah, totally. And I want to catch your wrist. $30,000 revenue account. So, you know, it's probably a $250,000 premium account. So, you know, that's a good sized account that is, you know, willing and able to make a decision to move their insurance program, you know, essentially via text message. And so, you know, that's a good case study into how you can, if you're doing things right, you can win big deals, right?
Yep.
But so use the word assume a couple times in there. And I think that this is so impactful. We make a lot of assumptions in our business, right? We assume people understand things. We assume that they're getting good service already, right? Like we assume that they're getting their certificates right. So we don't either ask the questions or we don't have that conversation, because we just make an assumption that those things are handled a certain way, or because they've bought insurance and they've been in this position the last 5 years, they know this. And I was just put up a post on this on LinkedIn, because I think it's great. We should never make those assumptions. I mean, we just had a large client, they're a newer firm, but they're a newer company growing fast contractor, that essentially the reason we got the opportunity was because they can't get certificates in a timely manner, and it's starting to impact their ability to do work. And like, I'm going, man, we've got to the point where we just kind of gloss over certificates. You just assume that firms are doing it well. I'm like, that's not the case. You know, they're like, if you guys can just get us our certificates, like we'd move everything here. How do you handle certificates? And we're like, okay, it's table stakes. Let us tell you about the bigger stuff, you know, that we think is cool, but they're just like, I don't care. I just want my certificates on time.
Right.
So anyways, I want to make sure that we hit on that, because communication and these new buyers are certainly one thing, but we should never make that assumption, right? And so how do you coach your producers, or what are your thoughts around how you set yourself up to not make those assumptions? You know, meaning like, how do you go in and you learn that from the client versus assuming the client is a certain way?
Ask questions, right? It's any relationship. You're never going to know until you ask. And sometimes you have to ask the tough questions to get the response, not that you're looking for, that you need, but the response that's correct.
Yeah.
Right. And so I tell producers, account managers, account executives all the time, ask the right questions that get your customer or prospects talking, because there you're going to find the solution that you need to provide. Because to your point, Elliot, right? I'm working with a contractor. I know all the things that they need. And instead of assuming and wasting 30 minutes with someone's time, ask the right two or three questions and then sell to those two or three questions.
Yeah.
Right. Again, it goes back to don't intimidate people, because the more that you try to show how intelligent you are or all the great services that we can provide, that can intimidate a lot of people, and you lose a sale before you even actually start the sales process. So having amazing questions that you can ask is the key to everything that you're going to do.
No, I totally agree. So do you have, or I guess coach people, or what are your thoughts around having consistent questions? And, you know, I use the term assessment format where I'm not talking about a questionnaire where I go in and interrogate you. I'm saying, okay, throughout my process, I need to get these questions answered, right? That's how I believe everybody should do it is, but that's a living document, right? You're going to learn what questions to best ask, how to word things appropriately, especially if you're niche focused, which again, we could spend all day talking about. But what are your thoughts around how to kind of craft that so that, again, you're not forgetting to ask certain important things, which is very easy to do when you get into a sales conversation or a process with a prospect. You know, you might forget to ask about how they like to communicate or forget to ask about certificates or whatever. So go ahead.
Yeah. So shameless plug for Premier Strategy Box.
I was teeing it up for you, Mick.
And launch, right? But, you know, we've created what we call producer playbooks for probably 30, 40 niche markets. And these playbooks have literally step-by-step the questions that you need to ask, how you can frame it, what is the buyer looking for, or what challenges should they have that you should know about going into it. So it literally is your playbook with play-by-play instructions of everything that you need to do. Now, does it mean that you ask every question in the playbook or every question of an assessment? No, but you should have those resources there for you. And one of the things that I'm excited about, again, shameless plug for both of us, right, is that we've got these in, I'll say, PDF fillable format, right? So you can take them, live with you forever. But in conjunction with you and your team at launch, we're now going to be able to take these, make them electronic, make them digital, make them personal to you as the producer or the principal or the account executive, so that when you're there, you have something that you can now display back to your client on what you need. So I think, again, as much or as many resources as you can have to make your job easier, and you don't have to think of 100 questions. Have them right there in front of you. I think that's the way, right? Again, don't intimidate anyone, but ask the right questions and know where those questions can be. And you and I both are huge fans of being very niche specific and having niche markets. Have those questions specific and not generalistic type questions either. Your prospects will appreciate it, because that's how you can show your knowledge, by asking questions to them that are specific to them.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I think that's becoming almost an expectation to a degree, which we could go down to, but I am very excited about, bringing together Patty and launch. I think you've got a lot of the best in class content built within Patty. And I think launch can be a great delivery mechanism where it makes that the how to of how do I go deliver this effectively to my client, super easy to do. Right. And so, excited that we'll obviously be releasing more information, but we're working on that integration right now. It's going to be pretty awesome. But I think the key is, I get a lot where I'll ask folks this question. I'm like, how do you know, what questions do you ask of a prospect? And how do you know you're getting the right information? And they're like, I've just done it long enough, my fifth or sixth year in the business. And I just kind of know. And like every time I'm like, well, you're closing at a 20% less. I'm making it up, but you're closing far less than you should. I can just tell you that because you're missing things, right? And you're missing the opportunity to optimize your language, to optimize your questions, and to get really, really, really good with a particular type of client. And again, I want to be clear. We're not talking about an interrogation or a questionnaire. It's very conversational-based questioning that gets you the information that you need. And I loved how you put it, like, keep it simple. Find the top three problems. Find, you got to ask questions to find them, that prospect has, and then go solve those. And along with that comes the insurance program, or comes whatever else that you're offering to them as part of your service, right? Mm-hmm. But they care about these three things. Go solve those, right?
Absolutely. And so for free, I'm going to give this out right now, right? I'm firing myself, but it's totally fine, right? I can promise you, I don't care the industry. I don't even care the product. I always ask these first two questions, and this will lead to the questions that I need to ask later. Number one, and we'll just say we're producers. what do you love about your current agency or broker? Like, what are the things that you love? And I'm going to give you the science behind that. One, I'm trying to be friendly, right? I'm making this a friendly environment on a psychological level. And two, selfishly, I need to make sure what they love about their current agent, I can also do, right? Because yeah. if Elliot loves the fact that his current agent is his brother-in-law, I got no shot unless yeah. you know, there's something else I need to do, right?
Yeah, but even that deal Thanksgiving gets awkward for that guy.
Right. And then my follow-up question to that, what do you wish your current agent did better? And then I'm finding out why I'm there, right? Because remember, if someone's taken the time to have a 5, 10, 15 minute conversation with you, pain exists somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. Because when people are completely happy, it is very easy to say no to a meeting.
Yep.
Right? It is very easy to say no to a meeting. So when someone says yes, and you're face to face, or you're on the phone, or they're taking a moment to text back and forth with you, or you're at a conference or an event, if someone's giving you time, you need to figure out why they're giving you time. And so that's what my second question is. What do you wish your current agent or broker did better? And then I sit back because now I'm going to get pain. And now I know where to do my next set of questions, right? Always yeah. figure out why you're there. That's the most important good. Thing that you can do as a salesperson, regardless of the industry. Again, time is our biggest asset. No one likes wasting time. So if someone's giving you their time, figure out why. And that second question will always tell you why.
Yeah, that's so good. Do you find in the first question that you get to the second question a lot? So like we'll ask the what do you love most question. You find a lot that they're like, well, what do I love? Like, I mean, I guess he answered my phone call when I call, and that's pretty good. But you know what I really hate is they don't get back to me with my certificate. You know, they almost go into what they don't exactly. Like.
But that's the psychology of the question because yeah. they know it's coming too, right? Like when you can talk about the things that you love or like about something, you immediately start thinking through the things you don't like first yeah. most of the time, yeah. right? Right.
So which in our industry is a lot. Like the bars can be very low.
Exactly. So it's all the psychology of setting up questioning, right? It's tell me what you love. Now, what do you wish they did better? And I never say, what do you hate? What do you not like?
That's smart. I know.
What do you wish they did better?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to find out with that question, the answer you give me, I know exactly why I'm in front of you now.
Yeah.
Right. I know exactly why I'm in front of you now. And I'm also not naive. You're going to get, I pay too much for insurance, right? Yeah. You're going to get that. Or, you know, I wish my pricing were lower. I wish they had more of this or better of that. Know what your follow-up should be. Because yeah. I always say this, no one knows that they're paying too much for something unless something bad has happened, right? Like, Ellie, I'm sure yeah. you have your own barber, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if you're paying too much for his services or her services unless you have a service failure, then you need to go look for another barber.
Yeah.
So you don't know you're paying too much for something unless something bad has happened or some type of comparable has happened.
Yeah. Well, I always think too, so I agree with that, but don't shy away from that. You know, people, they like tend to, producers tend to kind of want to shy away from that conversation. If that's what they say is that, you know, price is most important to them, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Ask them more questions about it. Like, well, what right. is your, you know, so what strategies are you implementing to lower cost? Do you know how to lower cost in your insurance program?
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the time they're going to say, well, no, I mean, I think my agent shops it around. Like, I guess I don't really know.
Right.
Well, that's just gold. The less that right. they don't know, or the more that they don't know about what's going on, the better you can
mm-hmm.
come in and show them a clear picture as to what should happen
mm-hmm.
and win more of those deals pretty easily. So I think it's just don't shy away from those. I always just love the tell me more question. If you're not sure, just say, well, tell me more about that, Mick, you know?
Right.
It's the easiest one to go to. So now I'm going to force you to really get fired and give away all your secrets, but
Let's go.
I think Cody told me this one, but talk about, I can't remember exactly what you call it, but where you get the agreement in this first meeting that if you do certain things, they will do business with you. And there's a very specific way you guys teach that.
Yep.
But I think that's huge. You've got those first two questions where you're learning why you're in that meeting. Then you're going to have the meeting and then talk about that piece a little bit. So I think it's, I want to reiterate with everybody.
Yeah. So once I've asked the questions and I learn why I'm there, what I'm doing is uncovering pain, right? And so during that pain session, as I like to call it, I end it with this. If I can solve, and I insert the pain points that are there. So Elliot, if I can solve your pain at a reasonable price and within your budget, will you do business with me? Right? Before I go into working on quotes or structuring a BOR agreement or whatever, I need to make sure that if I deliver, they're going to do business with me, because I'm not going to waste my time if they're not. And I'm not afraid to ask that question before I begin work. So my agency, again, before I sold it, when we asked that question, if I can solve your pain points at a reasonable price and within your budget, will you do business with me? If we got a yes, we had an 82% close ratio.
Oh, wow.
Because we're not going to waste our time. Yeah. And we've got that agreement up front, and we remind throughout the rest of the sales process of that agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And our job is to then come back with a reasonable price and within their budget. And again, I'm going to continue to give secrets away of our sales process, right? If they say yes, they now have opened the door for me to find out what their budget for insurance is. Yeah. Not what they're currently paying for insurance, what their budget for insurance is.
Which is completely different.
Exactly. Because especially on the commercial side, and I love commercial, I always put your insurance costs as a percentage of revenue. And it becomes very easy for me in hard markets like we're in today or at renewal to continue to speak about a percentage of your revenue. Because if Elliot's revenue increased and his budget for insurance is 10%, I just bought wiggle room.
Yeah.
Right. Conversely, if Elliot's budget went down, or not his budget, but his revenue went down, I need to start having a conversation. Hey, your budget for insurance is 10%. We might need to increase that budget to 13%.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, maybe this marketing budget needs to be shrunk a little bit. I can have business conversations with business owners. So my pro tip of the day for anyone that's doing commercial, talk premium as a percentage of revenue for your business owner.
Fantastic. Yeah. Because you hit it right there. You're having now a business conversation, not a sales conversation.
Exactly.
You know, which I think clients can feel that whichever one of those you're in. You know, if you're sitting on the same table with them saying, all right, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Client, this year you're talking about the market, hard market, and you're saying, I think we're going to need to look at, as you're doing budgeting, increasing that insurance budget from 10 to maybe 13%, like you mentioned, or whatever. You know, what do we need to be thinking about as far as reallocating dollars in your business, or, you know, what you delivered bad news, your insurance pricing is going to go up, but you did it in a way to say, but let me help you. Like, what do we got to do? How do we need to think about this? You know, are there things we can do in the insurance program that might offset some of those costs? You know, whatever, but.
No. And if they've had a great year in their business, hey, you're still within budget too. And then all is equal, right? Again, the psychology of that. But here's why we did budget as a percentage of the revenue. It's an easier conversation for you, especially for the account executives and account managers listening to this call, right? Because you're usually the one that has to deliver the bad news. If your insurance premium went up 25%, that might only be a 2% increase of your budget.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk in the smallest denominator that I can.
Yeah.
So instead of saying 25% here, I'm going to say it's a 2% or 2.5% increase over here. Much easier to digest. Again, you're talking to business people, right? Have business conversations, because I promise you, their attorney, their accountant are talking to them the same way that we are. And we have to put ourselves at that same level, because for most businesses, insurance is a top three expense, right? Have that conversation to make it that important.
Yeah. No, that's gold right there. And I've never thought about it, honestly, in those terms, but I'm definitely stealing that.
You can have it. You just fired me, I think, too.
Right? Yeah, so. No way. But no, I agree with you. I mean, I think the more that we're positioning ourselves as trusted advisors to the client, the more that we can have those peer level conversations, and then the less they're going to take the next phone call from somebody saying, let me quote your insurance, you know? which is the majority of phone calls, right?
Right.
And the more, again, you can position yourself differently to that business owner, the better off you're going to be to not only win the business, but also keep the business.
And no, and you hit it on the head, right? Again, I don't want any producer, risk advisor, whatever great name you want to give yourself. Yeah. I don't want you to be naive thinking that it's the incumbent agent in you and that's it.
Yeah.
These prospects are getting calls, right? And they know 120 days out, 90 days out, their phone's going to ring.
Yep.
Don't be naive and think that it's you're the first call that they've gotten, which is why you have to sound different. You have to be different. You have to Elliot's point earlier, you have to meet them where they want to be met. Because if not, you're just like the 40 other people that are reaching out to them during this 120 day stretch too.
Yeah.
And again, I say this to producers, risk advisors, whatever term you want to give yourselves all day long. You have to be different because you are automatically going to get loopholed into every other insurance advisor, agent, producer out there. What makes you different?
Ah, love that. I ask that question all the time. I agree. You're lumped into a certain bucket, right? But one of the things that I have experienced, Mick, is our language does have to be unique and different, or it should at least put ourselves above or different than, you know, standard insurance. It doesn't have to be like completely unique to me, right? But you have to get on a different level with that business owner. But one of the things we've experienced is, in order to truly stand out, it has to be through the process that the client experiences.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just words to a degree. Like, very rarely, and I love when I hear people that pound on the one meeting BOR, you know, or one call close. I'm like, that's great. Good job. But that's not really replicatable. And are you actually different, or have you created a long-term? What prevents it
from happening next year?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like the next time that the client gets that call, right? Because you haven't created anything different. You might have solved a pain point because they were ticked off about something in the moment. Again, great, good work. But that's what we've found is we've really spent a lot of time being intentional about the process that that prospect is going to walk through.
Yep.
So that they can feel that we're different. Not that we're going to say we're different, not that we put fancy graphics in front of you or whatever. You're going to get a change in your business by hiring us, right? And I think that's important for people to realize too, that you can't, if you don't have a lot of that built, going in and using the language will just fall flat, right? Changing how you feel and using this line that Mick just mentioned, you know, like that's great. But if you haven't gotten them to a certain point in that conversation, it's going to be awkward. It's going to be weird. You know, they're going to be like, no, I don't really want to hire you yet. Like, I don't, you haven't given me any problems that I have, you know?
Right.
So I think that's important too. Be intentional about the sales process and the experience that your client's going to get and what you want them to see, feel throughout that process, right? So all that being said, another topic, I think this kind of leads, or it's an ancillary topic to what we're talking about, but seeing a shift kind of in the industry with a lot of firms trying to get into commercial, right? And you mentioned that was kind of your interest always from day one, but I've had a lot of conversations with firms that are, you know, mostly personal lines looking to get into commercial, or maybe it's a scratch agency that's really small, kind of doing everything, wants to elevate. So what are you coaching or telling folks that are in that position? And what are you seeing out there?
Yeah. So a couple of things, and I always say this, and this is why I was more commercial/business focused than personal lines. You're having conversations with business owners who, whether they want to accept it or not, understand, because if it's a hard market in insurance, guess what? Right. It's usually a hard market everywhere. The cost of lumber increases. The cost of gasoline has increased. Most of your business clients are charging more for their services than they were a couple of years ago because they now have to do the same thing. So you can have, I'm not going to say more intelligent conversations, but you can have more structured conversations because life is life and business owners get it.
Yeah, right? Less emotional to a degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So that's number one is what I see and why I did that. And then number two, the hard market hits different depending on what your niche markets are in commercial, right? Like, I have several agencies that aren't affected by the market because of what they write.
Yeah.
You know, like personalized is personalized. You have home, cars, toys, and umbrellas. And when there's a hard market, all of that's affected, right? Well, in commercial, general liability, not really affected as much by a hard market. Workers' comp in the hard market we're in today isn't really an affected line of business. My two favorite things. So pro tip number two. Number one, you all don't want me to start an agency. But if I did, I would write nothing but cyber and D&O profession. That's all I would write. Because you know what? It's never affected by a hard market. Ever.
Yeah. And there's not, for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like too many people are picking that as a niche.
No, which is why, again, if you're listening, you don't want me to start an agency because I would do nothing but cyber and professional, and I would do it really well. And you all can do it really well too.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can be a cyber guru. You can go to a lot of events and conferences in those spaces and be the only or one of the few of insurance agencies or brokers that are there. Right? Like I go to a lot of trade association events on a speaking perspective outside of insurance. Rarely do I see insurance people there. Right. Like rarely do, but you see a whole bunch of marketing firms there. You see a lot of other vendors that are the same type of vendors in our industry, but rarely do you see the insurance person there. So I don't want to say my final pro tip because I don't know what questions you're going to ask, but my next pro tip is get into cyber, get into professional, because a lot of people are not, except Elliot. So you can fight Elliot, but I promise you that's where I would go. Low service, instant ROI. You can build landing pages and a ton of marketing content specifically. I mean, you can do that for every niche. You should do that for every niche, but you don't see a ton of cyber. Like we have a team that literally looks at hundreds of websites a month in our space. We don't see anyone except two of our clients that specifically say that they just do cyber or they just do professional. I would do that all day.
You think it's because is it intimidating to producers, you know, because cyber is looked at as complex or D&O, just we don't do as much of it, you know, so it's, I don't understand it as well. Or, you know, why do you think that is? Because it does seem like cyber is such a perfect opportunity for a niche focus. It is, you know, massive implication to your client. It's huge. Clients typically don't know the potential risks that they're assuming, right? With everything we do nowadays with tech. And that's a good point you brought that up, because I do think there is a big opportunity there, and it doesn't seem like anybody's really grabbed onto it, you know?
Yeah, so I think it's threefold. One, and I don't know why, and I still see this to this day, and I want people to stop doing this. They just assume they can add the endorsement on a BOP or a package, and that is not cyber liability insurance. Like, if you actually read it, it is not cyber liability.
It actually drives me nuts that the carriers even do it, because I think that's doing a disservice to
it's no coverage.
Yeah.
It literally is zero coverage, which is why the carriers throw it on there, because they know that there's no coverage. Well, there's no output for a claim.
It makes the client and agents that may not understand it think that they have cyber coverage. You know, and
that's not cyber liability. It is not.
Anyways, we could go on a soapbox about that one, but
yeah. So I think that's one. Two, to your point, just understanding what cyber truly is, right? Unlike your other lines of business, right? Like when you go to a CIC course or CPCU course, they don't talk about cyber, right?
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of education on cyber, but it's coming. I promise you it's coming. And then three, I think the biggest myth is people don't think that there's a lot of premium in cyber because they're used to the endorsement.
Yeah.
I can promise you, I have a producer whose average revenue, and all they do is cyber, average revenue is $18,000. Revenue.
Revenue, everybody. Revenue.
Right. Yeah. Revenue. Yeah. Cyber is there, and I personally feel cyber is going to become a mandatory coverage in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Right? Just like in most states, comp is mandatory. I truly feel like cyber at some point is going to be a mandatory coverage because it is the number one claim that is out there in the world, right? Like,
yeah,
I do a lot of speaking for financial institutions, if you knew how many hack attempts there were at banks, you probably would take your money and, like my grandfather used to say, bury it in your backyard.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you knew 100%. The number of hack attempts, I'm not saying that they prevail, but the attempts are crazy. If you knew the attempts that happened on your own internet at home,
that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
If you knew the number of attempts
or your business, yeah,
you would freak out. And I promise you, it's the number one claim by far. It is the number one claim by far.
Yeah. And I totally agree with the fact too, that I think it's going to, whether it's mandatory, you know, at the state level, like work comp, or I've been talking to some bankers and I'm like, you guys are missing the boat here. Like, you have these big loans out for businesses. Like, if they're, you know, you always want collateral or you want property insurance, you know, and whatever on the building, it's like, what happens if, like, you should be, I guess what I was saying is, you should be requiring other insurance coverage as well. Because what happens if that business goes out of business? Guess what? They can't pay back your loan. And that's what you care about ultimately. And so why are you focusing so much on just insuring the asset? You should look at the business as a whole. And, you know, cyber, as I was using that as an example, I'm like, you should be telling them they got to have cyber insurance, because especially depending on their industry, that literally could put them out of business like that.
Ransomware is the number one cyber threat out there.
Yep.
When you break down cyber claims, ransomware, number one. And we all, every day we get a phishing type of email, whether it's from one of our carriers,
clients, a vendor
that we use, our client. Yeah, we get the phishing email. We all have had our emails hacked, whether we believe it or not, right? Like, and by hacked, it's just all of these major retail stores get hacked all the time, right? I promise you, I don't know if I've ever shopped at, I was about to say Macy's, but I guess I have. But we all get emails from a place that we've never signed up for or subscribed to. Well, guess how our email got out there?
Yeah.
Someone got hacked. It happens every day, all day. That's why I think at some point it's going to be mandatory.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing, honestly. I mean, it's one of those that, again, like you're seeing it in the healthcare industry right now, where that the main payment processor, which is now owned by United Healthcare, I think, but, you know, it got hacked and ransomware, and they literally can't process payments. And it's just about to crush a lot of the those, whether it's small clinics or even large hospitals, they can't process money, can't process payments.
Yeah. There's a, oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's a problem. You can't get cash.
There's a lot of things that happen that are cyber that don't really get said as cyber claims, right? Like, there was a major cell phone company that was almost shut down for a few hours a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Cyber, promise you.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Right?
They won't, sometimes they won't tell you that, but.
No, but I mean, think about it. Anytime there's a major outage of something, it falls along the lines of some type of cyber liability somewhere.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Well, that's another whole area that we could probably do a full episode on, because of the implications of it, and that, which means opportunity, right? So, yep.
And I think, you know, since we teased Patty and launch earlier, that cyber assessment is available.
There you go. 100%.
The cyber playbook exists.
I want to point everybody out to that, where everybody thinks niches mean industries, right? Or that's what most commonly people think about. Like, I'm a niche. My niche is contractors. My niche is, you know, electricians or whatever. And that is certainly one way to go about it. But I actually think one of the better ways is in something like a coverage niche or an expertise type of niche. Because if you're a cyber liability expert, and that's what you focus on, that's your niche, you still now have every industry that you can go after. Now, some are going to be more apt to, you know, need it and have a higher risk, like a bank or, you know, healthcare institution or whatever. But everybody needs it, right? Or D&O.
There's not anyone you can't talk to about cyber.
Exactly. Really.
And here's also what I love about it. And again, if I were to start an agency that you guys don't want me to start, why I would do cyber?
Nick, I think maybe you and I just need to start it. I mean, you know.
I don't know, Elliot. I don't know. But if I did, it would be cyber. And here's why. I don't want you to break up with Elliot. I want Elliot to keep your property and your autos and all those things that require phone calls and servicing. I'm a cyber expert. That is all that I do. You don't have to break up with your current agent. I'm not asking you to. What I'm saying is this is what I do really well. And I'm sure that your current agent does property and certificates amazing.
Yeah.
They don't do cyber like I do, just like I don't do auto like they do.
Yep.
Right. You're not asking people to break up with anyone.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because I don't want all the lines of business. I just want cyber.
Yeah.
Please stay with Elliot. Call him every Monday and Friday for your COIs. Please.
Yeah. Please. Let Elliot hire the 35 people that I need to process.
Right. 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 Let Elliot tell you the bad news when your rates go up, right?
Yeah.
Cyber, yeah, unless you had a claim, I can pretty much tell you what you're going to pay every year.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear who takes this information and actually says, I'm going to go do this. Cause I would love to see somebody do that. I mean, I think it's and then maybe we'll do it internally with one of our risk advisors. I don't know. We'll see, but I couldn't agree more with you. And I think it's an untapped market, and just in general, the theory behind, you know, picking something like cyber or cyber is it's just a gold mine in being mm-hmm. able to grow and scale. So I want everybody to go check out Patty, because, you know, we'll probably be harping on it even more, especially with bringing Launch and Patty together. But one of the things that I told Mick when he first showed me Patty and told me the investment that Patty is, which is very nominal, I said, what are you doing, Mick? Like, there is way too much value here for what you're selling this for. And to his credit, he said, look, this information needs to get out to independent agents, and we want to be the platform that does that. And I think everybody should go check out Patty and consider a membership, or I don't know what you call it, I guess, but joining Patty, because the value you will get in these areas, like we're talking cyber, you could build a cyber practice tomorrow with the information that's in Patty, right? And do that at a very nominal cost. And so I think everybody should go check out Patty, check out what Mick's doing, if you haven't already seen it. And I just appreciate you coming on, man. It's been fun.
I appreciate you more. Go Huskers. How are we going to look this year?
Yo. Hey, we got a big game tonight. Big Ten tournament.
There you go.
Are you talking about basketball? We got basketball tonight, and then football. Yeah. Who the heck knows? Our AD just left. You know, the state's in turmoil. Who knows? But
you'll figure it out.
It's kind of been a couple decades of that, so we're used to it. You know? All right, man. Appreciate you. Have a good weekend.
Appreciate you back.
Thank you for tuning in to Getting Past the Premium. We are excited to continue breaking down barriers and finding solutions together. If you would like to reach out regarding anything you heard in today's episode, find links and contact info in the description. Until next time, have a great day.